Hi everyone, welcome to a very special episode of Dimes on Duval presented by Nerdy Nuts. I'm Keith Manzi and I'm going to be guiding you through this special episode where it'll feature two segments. The first segment being just Skylar and myself talking about the Gators and their loss against the Miami Hurricanes, as well as the Jacksonville Jaguars Season 1 preview. And then I'll turn things over to Mike, where he's hosting with the other Manzi, my brother Scott, to talk all about the Noles and their 0-2 start. What is wrong with Florida State? So without further ado, we're going to go ahead and just get started. This first segment is Skylar and myself talking Gators and Jags. 41-17, Miami runs away against Florida in Gainesville. Cam Ward throws for 385 yards, 3 touchdowns. Just a dominating day for the Hurricanes. You hate to see it as an Ole fan, because I hate seeing Miami look good. But Florida just flat out looked flat. And Skylar here is joining me now. And I have to ask, Skylar, did you see anything positive in that game on the Florida end of the field?
You know, that 71-yard run was nice, but yeah, they didn't do it more. And then DJ Lagway, yeah, showed some exciting, like, he just showed that he can probably play, you know, college football at a good level, so that was good. But other than that, a lot of positives for Miami, honestly. That's all I saw.
DJ Lagway came in after Graham Mertz goes down with a shoulder injury again. The guy who says I have unfinished business decides to come back, play another year because he breaks his collarbone, gets injured on an interception at the goal line to boot. I mean, just insult to injury. He is listed as active still, but signs are pointing to Lagway maybe getting some. Might start the game actually this week if Mertz cannot clear concussion protocol as well, because he was in concussion protocol. I agree with you. Lagway seems like he can be the quarterback of the future. He's touted to be the quarterback of the future. I think, you know, if Billy Napier wants to save his season, he needs to be trotting out the young, I think he's a freshman, and bench the, you know, fifth year guy. That's just, why is he starting to begin with? So, kind of a tough scenes overall. I think the hardest pill for me to swallow, if I'm a Florida fan, which I'm not, but, you know, trying to be inclusive here on this podcast. Miami players, you sent me a video on TikTok. Miami players were, like, dapping up recruits, potential players for the Gators. Dapping these guys up, like, come to the U, don't go to Florida, come to Miami, that's where it's at. And, like, they're taunting fans, and they're just having a great time because they, you know, beat the crap out of the Gators. How does Billy Napier not let that light a fire under him and piss him off to where, you know, I know you have Samford this coming week, but Billy Napier just doesn't seem like the guy to get angry at the correct things.
No, I mean, he blamed the fans. Like, I haven't heard the soundbite from his press conference or watched any of it, but just seeing the reactions, like, he said that it's something old, like, the fans are watching in their basements in rural Northwest Florida. So he's making excuses. I mean, we made excuses all offseason about how this is the toughest schedule, so you got to give him a break. And so he makes a lot of excuses. He, you know, talked about on the last podcast, you know, I wanted to see more disciplined football, because that's coaching. That's something that shouldn't be happening, especially in year three. And then on the first scoring drive Miami has, we commit a roughing the passer penalty. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like a hard hit, but it was well after he threw the ball. And it's just like, he's not even coaching the most simplest things. And it's very obvious. And it's just baffling. It's hard to understand why he's still in this position. You know, I was frustrated with him last year, and people keep saying give him time, let him get his players, but you know, like you said, DJ Lagway playing might save the season, but I doubt it. I think he's gone this season regardless.
That was actually going to be my next question, actually, is because yeah. Twitter has been on fire. Apparently, there's a flight from Oxford, Mississippi to Gainesville coming up soon. And the president, or the AD, excuse me, postponed his regularly scheduled press conference. Could Florida fire Billy Napier before this next game against Samford?
I don't think he'd be fired before the game. I'm hoping we lose, so that way he is fired immediately after. But with Mertz and concussion protocol and Lagway playing, I think that gives us a better chance of winning, thus giving Tennessee the opportunity, I think, would be our next opponent. I don't have a schedule in front of me, but I believe Tennessee's after that. And,
Texas A&M is actually next.
Texas A&M.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Texas A&M, they look okay. They're a beatable team if you have a good team, an okay team, but we don't have an okay team, so I don't know. We'll see how much Texas A&M can beat us by, because Miami did look good, but that's one question I have, is we need to see them against some other ACC opponents, because Florida's looked bad for a couple of years now. It's not really a true test. And I'm not trying to take anything away from Miami. They did look great. They did everything right.
No, yeah. I hear you. I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. I mean, it's one game. That's where you see a lot of teams, you know, you sit back and scratch your head. It's like, man, are they really that good, or are they really that bad? We won't really know until a couple more games come through this season. I'm with you. I don't think they fire him. It's kind of a double-edged sword. So if they fire him, let's just say tomorrow, he's out. They play the Samford game. It's a good thing that it's the Samford game, because I think you can get away without having a new head coach for a game like that. But also, it's not good because you literally just said, all right, well, the season's done. We've just thrown it away. We're paying this guy, you know, $22 million or whatever to just leave after we put so much into him. And then on the other end, if you don't fire him and you just let him play out the year and you win, you know, less than six games, it's still another throwaway season. You feel like crap afterwards and you're still stuck with this guy. But if you do fire him later on in the year, it's like, well, why didn't we do it earlier? So I don't think there's a winning scenario for Florida right now. I don't think he is the coach at the end of the season. But I do think that he does at least last this next week. I don't know what this postponed press conference is. If it is him getting fired, well, so be it. But I'm with you. I don't think he gets fired just yet.
Yeah, that's why I hope, you know, we do lose. But, I mean, I don't want us to lose any game ever. But I've been tired of Billy for a year and a half now. I'm ready to go and not spoil any other careers, John Gainesville, because I was excited to see ETN have a career down here too, and he transferred away. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, obviously with coaching change, there's going to be players that are going to leave. So
absolutely.
It'll look, but that's the nature of college football.
That is the beast of the game these days. So Florida plays Samford this Saturday at 7 p.m. at home. So we will see what happens then. Skyler, appreciate you as always. I can't say go Gators, but, you know, F the U. Not so fast, my friends. I'm sorry. We're actually not going to cut it off right there. We're going to talk Jaguars Dolphins game one, because that's the next day, September 8th at 1 p.m. on CBS. Jacksonville flies down to Miami to take on Miami. As of right now, you've got Jalen Waddle is questionable. Aaron Brewer, their guard, is questionable as well. Jags have a few guys that are questionable, including Daniel Thomas, Christian Kirk. How are you feeling about Jags game one? I think, let me pull up the thing here. I think Mike said we were going to lose this game, but you and I said we were going to win.
Yeah, no, I'm,
yep.
I, as optimistic as usual with the Jaguars, despite what they've done in the past. I'm excited. I think this one, I know I said about the Gator Miami game, I thought it was going to be close, but I this one's going to be close too. I feel better about this one being closer than the game.
I'm with you there.
Yeah, I do believe this is the first game we face Jalen Ramsey since he's not been a Jaguar, but I can't remember correctly if we played LA or not.
Wow. Yeah, that's crazy if true. I think you're right.
So that is also an intriguing storyline I'm looking forward to. You know, obviously he was upset about Bo taking all the attention. So he couldn't handle it. It's just hurt his back. But now that we got Trevor Lawrence in town, I'm excited about it all. Brian Thomas, Christian Kurt, you know, Gabe Davis too, Evan Ingram. I'm excited to see what they'll do. Worried about Tyreek Hill and if Jalen Waddle can play, which he probably will play. Because secondary's been a question all offseason. We've gotten rid of Darius Williams, the powerful Creekside Knight.
That still hurts me, but I understand it.
Yeah. So, I mean, everything has looked good in the preseason. Of course, it's preseason.
Right.
But,
You know who we play that you didn't mention also? We play Jalen Ramsey. We're also playing Calais Campbell.
Oh, yeah. Just recently signed not too long ago, right? About a month or so ago.
I missed the mayor.
So that is another interesting piece. They're trying to rebuild Saxonville. what is it, 7 years later?
Yeah. two pieces at a time.
Well, too bad we got Gibson, so they can't get him. Hopefully they sign Barry Church.
Oh my God, yeah, they can have him. But
yeah.
Miami, I agree with you. The biggest concern for me is Tyreek Hill. If he gets behind the safeties, Tua can just chuck it down there and he'll go get it. The defense is going to be put up to a great week one test. The offense is still just, I mean, from the limited stuff we've seen in preseason, they haven't announced who's calling plays yet, have they?
What was that?
They haven't announced who the play caller is, right, for us?
They've been coy about it, but I'm pretty sure it's still going to be Press Taylor.
I think so, too. I think they're doing it on purpose to, like, you know, mess with people's heads. But regardless, if we call a game where it's not just run for 2 yards on first down, throw an incomplete pass on second down, and then we're faced with 3rd and 8 and 3rd and 7. If we do the opposite of that and we go for long shots early in the game to BTJ, if we do some off crazy reverses, I don't know, if we mix it up and kind of make it fun, I think we can win this game offensively, because I don't know too much about the Dolphins defense, but I think we can expose it.
I think it'll be a Christian Kirk game. I think it'll be primary target, but I do think, Brian Thomas will get some shots, like some deep shots, and kind of become a name in this league quickly. Because this was a highly touted wide receiver draft, and he was the fourth one taken, obviously. But I do, like, everyone's expecting Neighbors and Harrison to get the ball in their situation. Whereas Thomas is in the perfect situation for him to just be free. He's not going to have Ramsey on. Ramsey is going to be on Kirk. I mean, unless if Ramsey stays on one side, I presume Ramsey's going to be following around Kirk. But if Ramsey's not on Kirk, then Kirk's going to eat. So, yeah, I agree. It'll be fun to watch. Excited for it. That's the only thing I got looking forward to this fall.
I unfortunately have to second that notion. So give me a score prediction. What's the final score?
I think it's going to be a high-scoring game. A lot of back and forth. It'll be 34-30 Jacksonville.
34-30. High-scoring affair for Skyler. I'm not going to ask Mike. He can just phone it in later. I'm going to say 24 24-20, Jacksonville. So kind of the same notion as you, but just 10 points less on each team. That would mean our defense played a really good game, and our offense is what I expect, because anytime the Jaguars score over 30 points, I'm amazed.
they scored 30 points pretty well last year, even though the offense looked like they struggled, at least early in the season, which I think we'll have.
Well, the first game of the season, we scored 31, and we didn't score 30 points again until week 7.
Okay, then I'm wrong. No, I think we'll have a better start to the season, though, because I think that will be a point of emphasis. Hopefully, it will be.
Fingers crossed.
This will be a tough opponent, but they're all tough opponents in the NFL.
That's why they're professionals. So appreciate you, Skyler. Officially, this is the end of this segment. And I'll take it back to Keith in the studio to get a segue into the next portion of Dimes on Duval. And there you have it. That is all the Gators and Jaguars talk we could fit into this episode. I'm going to go ahead and turn things over to Mike, who treated this as an episode on its own, which I love. And I'll talk more about that after they're finished. So, Mike, go ahead and take it away.
Welcome to another episode of Dimes on Duval. This is Mike Gyojdi, joined by Manzi, but not Keith Manzi, the normal host of the podcast. This is his brother, Scott. He is currently working as a blogger, just a freelance blogger. Why not? What's up, Scott?
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me on. I know I've been on the show a few times before and various capacities, and I'm happy to come back on and pinch it for Keith today as we break down what has been so far a disastrous start to the season in Tallahassee, especially with our Seminoles that we usually enjoy watching.
Yeah, it's funny. I was texting Keith last night during the game, and he literally said, "You and Scott should go on an episode tomorrow and record." And I'm like, you know what? That's not bad, because I feel like we both had the same frustrations last night regarding the watching of the game.
Absolutely. I mean, it was, Georgia Tech had some moments, at least. You had an opening drive to the game that made you feel some positivity. It was close throughout, and you lose on a last-second field goal. Monday night was a completely different story, Mike. It's a game dominated by Boston College from the outset of it. They're up the entire game. It's a multi-score game almost the entire game. Florida State just dominated but I won't say all three phases, because actually special teams was a rare highlight for the Noles mostly tonight. In fact, they probably out-special teamed Boston College, but there was such a small portion of the game, it did not matter when it was all said and done. And offensively and defensively, it was very lopsided in favor of the Eagles. And now you're sitting here at 0-2, two games into the season. And this is crazy. This is actually the third time in the 5 years that Mike Norvell has been the head coach, the Florida State's started a season 0-2, which, because of the positivity of the last two seasons, especially the way that the seasons have started, you kind of forgot about that. But here we are in what really isn't that unfamiliar of territory for Florida State fans. 3 of 5 years, we've been 0-2. 6 of the last 8 seasons, Florida State has dropped the opener. This is a program that is not very used to winning games early in the year, but people do forget about Duquesne, but mostly the LSU games the last 2 years have sort of helped erase some of those bad memories.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm glad you brought up the stat of the 3 of the 5 years of Norvell. I was going to bring that up. It's kind of wild that he has had 3 years of his 60% of his tenure here. He's had an 0-2 start, which is a staggering statistic in my opinion. But the first 2 years, the COVID year, was it 2020 or was it?
Yep, that's right. Yeah, 2020, 2021.
COVID year, and then the year we lost to Jacksonville State, those were disasters. And eventually they rebounded the next 2 years after that. But now we're back here again in year 5 of Mike Norvell as the head man. And there's a lot of questions right now about the coaching and the coaching staff and the coaching decisions. But before, I want to ask you those questions in a second. But during the game last night, What was your biggest frustration with the team? Because clearly it was a lack of effort for me. For me, I'll tell you what, lack of effort across the board. Defense did not look like they cared at all. Offense, DJ Uiagalelei did not look like he really was a vocal leader, and that's your quarterback, so he needs to be the most vocal person, but he just seemed very lackadaisical. He didn't really care to me, and it shows a concern for me, a possible microcosm of a bigger issue within the program. But I thought the lack of effort was very concerning to me, and I don't know if you felt the same way, or what was your biggest frustration with the game last night in Tallahassee?
Yeah, the effort was certainly a big one. A concern is mental toughness and the ability of some of these guys to put frustrations or bad starts or things like that behind them. We saw some in the Georgia Tech game, but we saw a lot less of it last night. Really, just the disorganization, I think, is the most frustrating thing, right? Like, so you don't have some success. Maybe you get a bad break here, you get a bad break there. Some of the things that are out of your control. Well, you know what's in your control? Not giving back the 5 yards you got on first down because of an illegal procedure penalty multiple times. You know what's in your control? Not picking up multiple personal foul penalties, even if they were, in my opinion, some soft calls. You don't need to even put yourself in that situation to let the refs call that. The penalty disparity in this game speaks volumes about the way the game was coached. Boston College committed one penalty, and Florida State was way in the other direction as far as that. And many of them were just ones that were very frustrating or ill-timed. And the one that mattered the least was maybe the biggest microcosm of the entire game, is in that moment in which it sort of hung in the balance in the third quarter. Florida State had cut it to one score, felt like, hey, this is a moment. And then boss you commit a penalty on the kickoff, you give Boston College great field position. All of a sudden they're marching right down the field in a couple of plays, and they punch it in on a first and goal from like the 1 yard line when you had 12 guys on the field and you couldn't even stop them in that situation. So I think that is the part of me that ended up probably the most, to where I was yelling at the TV the most. I mean, some of the stuff you can kind of pin on, hey, these are new players, they're still figuring some stuff out, whatever. The stuff that you shouldn't have to figure out is where to line up and how to behave on a football field properly, and not give your opponent little edges on the margins like that, because this team doesn't have any margin for error, and they completely eradicated any margins last night.
For sure. And like, what blew my mind is how this is the lack of adjustments, also on top of that. Like, the personal fouls, the kickoff, that blew my mind. Like, why are you doing that? Like, you're already past the point. You're literally going past me. Just push them in. There's no need for that. The 12 men on the field, you still can't stop it. Granted, 1 yard to go is kind of hard to stop a team with 1 yard, but
Yeah, it didn't matter. They were going to score anyway, but it was just a
Exactly.
perfect encapsulation of the night.
Exactly. And the adjustments just blew my mind. Like, and I don't know if this infuriated you as much as it did me. The same concept was run over and over and over again.
Yeah,
The
Boston College
two,
ran four plays.
they ran a counter and they ran a wheel route that really, the running back wheel route that blew my mind, and we could not adjust. Our linebackers are piss poor. And it just, it, and this goes back to who they hired years ago. You're familiar with him. Noles, Gator fans, Hurricane fans, and now Seminole fans are familiar with him. Randy Shannon.
He's devastated multiple programs in the state now.
he is collecting incredible money from the state of Florida. So the lack of adjustments, the play calling, the clearly coaching is not working well in that room, and it's just leading to the defense being exploited, and it's a big problem.
Yeah,
My
absolutely. Yeah.
God, go
No,
ahead.
I'm just going to echo exactly what you said. Like, this team is not been prepared to make changes. And the defense did have moments in which they were better, but they couldn't stack those moments consistently. And as soon as they would figure out one thing that they'd finally end up getting some stops, then, Boston College would pull out one of their other four plays and that would start to work again. And they could never stack offensive success with defensive success. So the few moments in which the offense was actually able to put together a drive and get points out of it, the defense would respond by giving up points. Or if the defense was able to get a handful of stops, offense could never seem to turn those into points. There's just no complementary football being played right now.
Not at all. And it all starts really, it does start at the head coach level with Mike Norvell, but also there comes a certain point where the players have to execute and they're not executing. I wanted to bring you to the third quarter. I think it was his third quarter. I can't remember where, when DJ threw the pick on fourth down, it was on their side of the field. I can't remember if it was the third quarter or second quarter, but
Yeah, it was third quarter.
I think it
It
was the
was,
first drive of the third, I
yeah, it
think.
was the one in which you come out of the half having scored, and then you're thinking, hey, great opportunity to get this one a little bit closer. And you'd move the ball a little bit on that drive, and just the, well, I'll let you set this thing up because the third and fourth down failures all night long were
The
brutal.
third and fourth down failures were atrocious, in my opinion. DJ Uiagalelei, he's a fifth year senior, like fifth, sixth year, whatever he is now. He's experienced. Why are you throwing across your body to the left, to the other side of the field, and it just ended up being picked? And they returned it all the way back to inside the 10 and inside the 15. And it just set up Boston College with great field position. And that's what I honestly thought, that was the dagger. That's when you heard that we want Brock Chance. And I now have a question for you. Do you think there should be, and Mike Norvell avoided this question in the postgame presser, which I think speaks volumes to how he feels about the quarterback room. Do you think there is a now going to be a quarterback competition between DJ Uiagalelei, Brock Glenn, and even maybe the freshman Luke Romanhoke in this upcoming bye week, because God knows this bye week came at the right time.
Yeah, to you just said the key phrase there, Mike, and it's a bye week. This is typically where if you are having troubles and you want to make a change and adjust an offense or put in an install to fit that player, this is when you would do it. If they don't end up making the QB change now, then they are not going to do it until probably November or late October or something like that. It just depends on what the mindset is in the Moore Athletic Center and what are they viewing this as. The Maybe the best or the worst part of this particular year in college football is that the 12-team playoff exists. And so everyone is going to believe until they don't believe anymore that there's an outside chance that they could get in because we don't have any examples of what it looks like, what type of teams make the playoff, what their records are, what their resumes are. We've never seen a landscape of super leagues like we currently have built right now with the Big Ten and the SEC, where you just have to imagine there's going to be more teams with more losses playing postseason football this year, at least getting an opportunity to being in the conversation late in the season. So if they feel that they still can turn this thing around, which no one knows this better than this staff. And while they may say certain things publicly, they may feel other things underneath, right? Like they will know the strengths and weaknesses of this team. If they make a QB change, that means they have punted on this season. That means they are starting to build for the future. And that is not the worst thing in the world because I think you're probably like me, Mike. You are looking at a team that has played 2 weeks, and there is no semblance of a team that is good enough to make the playoff that is wearing garnet and gold right now. So, do you start to give the guys that are quote unquote the future some opportunities to go? But here's the bigger issue: Brock Glenn or DJ Uiagalelei. It doesn't matter if all the other components aren't good either. This is not as simple as a QB change, inflecting life into this team and all of a sudden being the difference between them being great and being bad. This is a team that can't run the football, has injuries and some ineffectiveness on the offensive line, has maybe some signs of life from the receiving core on Monday night. Hopefully, those guys continue to grow and get better. A defensive line that can't stop a nosebleed, a linebacking core that can't cover anybody. I mean, this is a team that has so many issues that if you're going to make the QB change, that means you're benching a whole bunch of other guys across the board too, and hopefully having enough faith in some of the recruiting underneath those guys to at least let them ride and see how they grow and develop. Because right now you've got a team that is not talented enough, that is not well organized or well coached enough, and doesn't really have a whole lot of intestinal fortitude to be able to bounce back. And the last thing you want to do is come out of a bye week and lose to your head coach's old school, right? But a Memphis team that very well would probably beat this team based off of how it's played the first 2 weeks.
Yeah, and you mentioned a few things I want to touch on. I am with you. I do believe there's no shot at ACC championship. Like, we're done. Like, we are losing the first two games, and those being conference games, I think, is a huge
blow. Yeah, you're
0-2
in the league, and we're in week one of the regular season. No one else is 0-2 in their conference right now.
Yeah, it's a brutal start. Like, I don't know if we're going to come back from that. Granted, the ACC is really a garbage conference with Virginia Tech losing to Vanderbilt. You've got SMU struggling last week against Nevada. Like,
NC State struggled at home against Western Carolina. You know,
yeah,
there's a lot of
ACC
teams that
is
are kind
not
of
a good,
mediocre.
Exactly. The ACC is not a good conference anyways. Right now, you're contributing to that. This is just like the problem with the ACC that was formed 20 years ago. They all thought Florida State and Miami would be top tier, top dogs, but the ACC have not done well. So I personally think I am a believer in the fact that they should go ahead and bench these transfer portals. People like these players because they're not showing up. You've paid a lot of NIL to certain players, not going to name names, but they are clearly not showing up. And I just do believe, like, the biggest thing going into the offseason or going into the season was the hype that this defensive line got from across the country, from beat reporters, NFL scouts, NFL reporters, or I'm sorry, the college football reporters. Pete Thamel, week zero, said this is the, according to NFL scouts, this defensive line is going to be the best in the country. And they've gone gashed the last 2 weeks.
Mike,
So I am.
You know what's funny is I dug out my old Athlon Sports preview magazines, and I kept them. I wish I had held on to all the ones that I had from back when I was in high school, because that would go back 20 years now. But I have over 10 years worth of Athlon preview magazines, and so I've just been skimming through them. Because it's a great reminder of how little we know going into a season, right? I'm reading QB battle predictions, national championship predictions, things talking about how this team's going to be great. This team has no chance. And then you move to the very next year and it's like, wait, that team won 11 games. They were predicted to win three, you know? So it's just a reminder that no matter what, you have to take everything preseason wise with a grain of salt. There are certain things that you feel pretty confident in, right? Alabama for many, many years under Nick Saban, you could probably just go ahead and cash that one in for 10 plus wins. Kirby Smart of Georgia has turned into that as well now, especially with Alabama moving on. But there are very few in which you can year in, year out, have these questioned expectations fulfilled. And to that point, Mike, we're in a situation right now, and I saw Bud Elliott of Cover 3 podcast reshare this last night from a few weeks back. Obviously, a Florida State guy, does an old cast as well. He answered some prompt a few weeks ago about, you know, Florida State's roster construction, things like that. And he said, like, my hot take that nobody seems to be joining me on is that I think that Florida State, if they had made the playoff last year, their roster doesn't look like this because they probably don't go so hard in the portal for a reload because they just feel more content about the way things went last year, right? Win or lose in that college football semifinal with Brock Glenn as your quarterback or Rodemaker, if he had gotten healthy, whatever they would have done, at least you would have gotten there. You would have felt the satisfaction of, like, this team was at least given a chance to do what it did. This year's team, it felt like they're trying to do some unfinished business, but the problem is, like, most of the guys with the unfinished business aren't here anymore. They have all
they're
these
cashing checks. They're cashing checks in the next level.
You've got a bunch of mercenaries who are wearing spear gold helmets and garnet uniforms that weren't a part of that climb that Mike Norvell, that trendy phrase that you use, is that weren't a part of the building up the last 2 years to get to that moment. to eventually not make the playoff on a questionable decision. But trying to run it back could end up being the decision that stunts the growth of this program a little bit over the next couple of years and really starts to lead to the question, you know, and I know Bud has talked about this and others have too, you know, is this staff good enough at high school recruiting to be able to reload and keep this Florida State team good year in and year out? Or will this be an every 5 years good program that is trying to do it through the portal all the time, which is just not a very sustainable proposition?
So you mentioned, and I'm going to touch on this transfer portal thing real quick before I go further. I had a question lined up for today's show for whether it was with us, like with you or Keith or Skylar or whatever. Do you think December's snub really impacted Norvell mentally? And also, like, it clearly affected the program because that was the fact that they had ESPN showing Norvell literally hunched over, leaning over and trying to get it. Like, that was a historic moment. Like, and they captured that full, like, that reaction of Norvell just looking exasperated. He didn't know what to, like, that's truly one of the, I don't think we'll ever see, we're never going to see that again. Like, that is truly one of the things that's going to be mentioned to, obviously, Norvell's daughter down the line out, like, or Bam. Like, it's going to be those kids, when they have kids and kids, it's going to be mentioned to their, it's going to go generations for that specific 2023 Florida State team. Like, I think it could have impacted him, and clearly impacted the decision making in the offseason. But what do you think? Do you think it actually impacted the program to that level?
It's probably twofold. It is probably the fact that that moment, which I kind of touched on, how I do think that it probably caused them to maybe think reload and go a little more aggressive in certain ways to take some chances on some guys in the portal to plug some holes that they think they had. But also, there's been a lot of hype, shall we say, positive press for Mike Norvell and his ability to master the portal, right? No one had figured it out better than Mike Norvell in Florida State the last couple of years. Whether it's, you know, Jared Verse, it's just go on down the line. You've got Jerrion Jones. You've got all sorts of guys. You've got both of your
Keon
linebackers,
Coleman.
Bethune and Deloach. You've got Keon Coleman. You've got Johnny Wilson. You've got
Jordan Travis.
Technically that was pre him.
Transfer portal.
He was a portal guy, but that was coming in from the Willie Taggart era. But still, he was the perfect blend of, like, hey, I'm going to take these guys. Jermaine Johnson, how about that? I'm going to buy low on these guys, develop them, and sell high. And that's what they were able to do really well. The problem is, I think we've just seen that it's the best programs year in and year out are still doing it the high school way. Georgia, Alabama for many years, Ohio State, Michigan the last several years. They are still recruiting well at the high school level, developing talent, losing some pieces because that's the way the landscape is these days. People will transfer out. They're keeping the most of the ones that they want to keep, and then they're supplementing. This is the whole argument against Dabo Swinney and Clemson right now, right? No one is saying that he can't recruit at the high school level. He's still recruiting very well at the high school level. He's just refusing to do the other thing, which is fill a couple of holes with some well-placed transfers. And so they're dealing with their own problems in Clemson right now. Florida State right now, again, has a bunch of guys who don't play very well together because they're haven't been teammates very long. And some of these guys just might not be all that good. You landed so many surprise talents. It's just not, even whether it's high school recruiting or portal recruiting, it's not likely that you're going to hit on everybody. And the problem when you miss on a portal guy, well, that guy was supposed to play. That's why you brought him in. You don't bring in portal guys usually for depth. They're coming in to contribute right away because they have more experience, they're older, things of that nature. And if you miss on that and you don't have any depth behind them from the high school level, well, then you don't have anybody.
Correct. Yeah. And I'm looking at it. It's funny you mentioned, like, the Dabo Swinney, how he doesn't rely on the trench portal at all.
Yeah.
Zach Blostein of Knowles247 posted an article earlier today. And I don't know if you're a subscriber of 247 or not, but I think this is public, just public to anyone who's not a subscriber, but I am a subscriber to Knowles 247. And he wrote an article about how the over-reliance may have come back to bite Florida State. And he put stats about how many players Norvell has taken in the portal over the last 5 years, going from 2020 to 2024, 10, 12, 14, 12, and 17. 17 players this offseason
So it's
is
the
the
most he's
most,
taken. Wow.
yep, most he's taken. And clearly he needed, there's a lot of holes on this team from last year, which makes sense. You lose 90%, over 90% of your production on offense. You lose a lot of defensive players. Some of them came back, but the majority of them went to the NFL. Compare now with high school, the final team recruiting rankings for FSU's high school classes during Norvell's tenure, going from 2020 to this past recruiting cycle, 21, 21, 19, 16, and 11. So progressively getting better, but it's getting the difference makers. You missed out on Travis Hunter, the historic flip in 2022. You missed out on Nigel Lee Kelly, the defensive end who now is playing for UCF. You lost flip season occurred a lot for Florida State, but the opposite way. They lost multiple recruits to SEC schools or conference rivals. Like you missed a lot of key players, and that's where, like you mentioned, the depth at the recruiting level is needed, and it's not showing up. And I don't know if Norvell is a true recruiter because honestly, we are in 2024. We should not, Florida State should not be losing to Boston College at home in the home opener, simply put.
No, and if this was a college football 25, I think Mike Norvell's trait as a coach would be master motivator. That
Yep.
feels like who he is. He's not the ace recruiter. And then the problem is, outside of Alex Atkins, who else is a great recruiter? Patrick Surtain. Okay, I'll give him that. But okay, so you got one guy on each side of the ball who's a really good recruiter. And then Odell Haggins still can pull some. He's fallen off over the years, but he's
He's
been.
fallen. I think he's fallen off completely,
Yeah.
personally. It's just me. I'm not the fan. He's not done anything recruiting wise. Sure, transfer portal, but he's a legend. It's gonna be hard for them to cut loose, but it's
But
just.
don't cut him loose. Cut one of these other guys who's not a legend loose, right? Like Randy Shannon, easy scapegoat, but he should not be your linebackers coach because he's not developing guys or recruiting. So what is he giving you? Absolutely nothing, outside of a familiar name, I guess, in the area. Adam Fuller, he's ridden a roller coaster in his career. He's probably coaching right now with one hand tied behind his back, and I'm going to give him a little more of the benefit of the doubt because I can see what he can do with some talent. But you've got to be able to find guys that can bring him in more talent. And the crazy thing is, I mentioned Surtain, the secondary is supposed to be extremely talented. I don't really know what the secondary does because no one has thrown the ball downfield more than two times a game against Florida State yet this year. So those guys are just basically extra linebackers at this point. Like you're just hoping that they can tackle on the edge because they are not even getting opportunities to go play DB the way that you would expect them to play DB. I have no idea how good they are. So, yeah, they need to find some, sometimes you can get, some results on the field can paper over some blemishes. And I think the way Florida State had played the last 2 years papered over some of the deficiencies in the coaching staff, and they're really going to have to look at that going into next year.
No, for sure. And you mentioned this a few minutes, a few like comments ago. The team, the transfers are clearly not like teammates. They're not playing with each other. Like they've never played with each other. So I was listening to some of the Florida State podcasts. I listened to Noel Cass reaction today. I know and listened to Noel's 247 on the bench. And both Bud Elliott, like you mentioned, and Chris Neah of 247 indicated that the defense seemed like they stated they don't really like each other. Like something's going on with the defense. And that could be either because they don't trust each other or like they just don't, they're not fans of each other. And Brandon Sinone of Noles 247 stated on the podcast, he said, Marvin Jones Jr., the transfer from Georgia. Norvell, Mike, everyone knows Mike Norvell runs after every practice from end zone, whatever. Marvin Jones Jr. runs with him too. But near the end, like he lets up. Like for him, and this is actually a good point. Like, if he's not giving full effort in practice, how is he gonna be in the game? And I'm pulling the AI meme. Well, yes, we are talking about practice. Like, this is you have to show up during practice for the team and overall the program to continue getting better at it in the future. And I don't, there's clearly no magic fix over the next this season. You mentioned like I personally think the The season is on life support in terms of making a bowl game. I don't know if they're going to win six games because we have obviously, like, just a quick glance at the schedule.
We got Memphis. Yep. Go ahead.
Memphis, Cal at SMU, Clemson at home, at Duke, at Miami, North Carolina, at Notre Dame, Charleston Southern, and Florida. Like, I can see Memphis beating us. I can see SMU beating us, Clemson, Miami, North Carolina, Notre Dame. That's seven losses right there. And that's a 5-7 season. And that's if you win every other game, but I don't know.
Let's just shorten it to the rest of September, Mike. I mean, do you feel more likely that Florida State is going to be 1-4 at the end of the month or 2-3?
Honestly, 1-4.
I mean,
Like, right with
you're
this.
not going to lose to Cal. I mean, I did not at home. Cal is not. I mean, blow it
I
all
thought the
up
same
if they
thing
lose to
about Boston
Cal.
College.
Yeah, but the difference is we didn't really know what to expect with Boston College, new coaching staff, some new pieces. They obviously have, and you're at a disadvantage, and I've heard this described. You're at kind of a disadvantage if you're a week zero team versus a team that hasn't played because there's no film, right? Florida State had no idea outside of they knew that Thomas Castellanos was fast, what to expect from Boston College coming into this game, how much they would even run it, how much they would run. I mean, I guess they knew what Trayshon Ward was because he used to be on the other sideline, but and he still runs hard as all get out. But the other aspects of it, like scheme wise, it was all new. Meanwhile, Florida State had already put some stuff on tape. Boston College able to prepare for that, and it showed. So by the time you get to this Cal game, I would think that they would have enough things figured out, unless this team just has a mutiny and all quits. You know, I guess it just sort of depends on how, you know, back to my mental toughness discussion, what this looks like. And if you're 0-3 with a loss to Memphis in a little less than 2 weeks' time, who's going to put that out of place? I mean, I was looking at this earlier today, Mike. I mean, it kind of reminds me of 2021 a little bit, right? You lose a close game in the opener. People are like, oh, we're not that far off. And then you lose one you had no business losing the next week. And I'm not
At
saying that the
home.
opponents are the same or the way the game's played out are the same because they're not. But we almost got tricked into thinking that this wasn't so bad or wasn't that far off. And now we're in a situation with a full-fledged evaluation being needed. That 2021 team started off 0-4, and people were talking about whether Mike Norvell would even make it through year two. And then, you know, fast forward here another couple of seasons, the guy's the reigning coach of the year. He's not getting fired even if they start 0-4 this year. But you're going to have to what he needs to do at that point is pull anything out and trust that, hey, listen, I have years to work on this. I might as well start showcasing the young guys and building for what's next and not worrying about whether or not we paid a bag to this guy who's only going to be here for another 3 months until, you know, the beginning of December, and he's going to be on doing whatever else it is he's going to be doing in his life, which for most of these guys who they brought in as transfers this year is not going to be playing football anymore after this.
Yeah, and it's funny you mentioned like he's not getting fired. I was going back and forth in chats last night. They were like, at what record do you fire Mark Norvell? I'm like, there is, unless he goes 0-12, you're not firing him.
The
Like,
guy went
there's, I,
undefeated in the regular season
that,
last year.
trust
Not
me.
even
And they're
Auburn's
granted,
firing their coach the following
yeah.
year, and they may
Like,
be the most crazy of all fan bases for this stuff.
yeah, and I don't see Norvell getting canned after this year. Now they're going to give Norvell a chance to make amends with this coaching staff. I will say that. I don't expect them to. I do expect changes in the offseason, one way or another.
Yeah,
Like
hopefully.
there has to be
There needs to
changes.
be.
There you can't come run it back with the same coaching staff, and you're gonna have to move on from certain recruits. I'm sorry, from certain transfers. So
Yeah.
those are my two cents on that.
Nothing like talking about next year after week one of college football, right, Mike? It just it almost takes you into the life of being a Jaguars fan, you know, for many, many years where we're having
Oh,
draft
don't.
talk at the end of September sometimes. So
Yeah.
at least we can look forward to that coming up this weekend. Hopefully they don't ruin the Jaguars bye week for us, because at least we know that
The
the
Knowles
Florida
bye
State
week.
bye week. At least we know
Yeah.
Florida State's not losing this week. That's the one positive.
I made a joke in one of my chats. They're talking about like just the games this weekend and spreads and stuff. I'm like, just take the bye week minus one against Florida State because there's something going to come up this weekend. I'm sure against Florida State, so that's not working in their favor.
Well, I appreciate you having me on to fill in for Keith and exercise some demons and get some thoughts out related to Florida State here. Anything else you wanted to talk about before we conclude today?
Nope, I'm good, honestly. Thank you for being flexible to come on tonight in place of Keith, and we'll have to get you maybe on a few more times during the season. I'm sure
Yeah,
that might have to happen.
I'd love to be a pseudo recurring guest now that I don't have a podcast of my own. Gives me an opportunity to stretch this muscle a little bit still.
There you go. That's all we need. And just to wrap up, before we wrap up, I want to give a shout out to our sponsor, Nerdy Nuts. So we still have the discount code DIMES10. So let me pull up the new flavors of the week.
I'm always
So
curious as to what these are.
I was gonna say, I don't think you can have them, can you? Are you? I don't know why I feel
Yeah, I
like
mean, I
you
can eat a
are.
little bit. There's a
Yeah.
decent amount of sugar. I should stay away from eating a whole jar or anything like that, but
Fair enough. So the new releases this week are a caramel and cookie twist peanut butter treat, a cookie butter brownie cheesecake peanut butter treat. They both sound the same to me, but a sweet spin nut butter treat, a Buckeye blackout cake peanut butter treat, and
Buckeyes.
oh, there's multiple, but a chocolate toasted chocolate, I'm sorry, chocolate toasted coconut almond butter treat, an apple pie peanut butter treat, that actually sounds pritty good,
Yeah.
and a peanut fritter peanut butter treat.
Man,
Oh,
they're
there's
just
more.
changing the
Those are,
game.
there's a bunch, there's a more, there's a few
Go to
more
the
flavors
website to
I'm not
see the
going to
rest.
say. Yeah, go to nerdynuts.com and use the code DIMES10 to help support us local podcast and also get some delicious peanut butter. So with that, I want to thank Scott again for joining Dimes on Duval. And with that, we'll talk to you next week.
And there you have it. That's our episode. Appreciate you all tuning in today to listen to the latest episode of Dimes on Duval presented by Nerdy Nuts. Mike did the ad read for Nerdy Nuts, so I didn't even have to worry about that. So that's what I wanted to thank him for. But we'll catch you next week, as hopefully we'll be talking about a Jaguars win in week one. Noles have a bye week, so hopefully they don't lose that, and the Gators will be hopefully 1-1. Thank you all for listening, and we will catch you on the next episode of Dimes on Duval, presented by Nerdy Nuts.